This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of December 9th, 2018. Welcome, I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, the Is It Just Me commentary, headlines from the Pacific Rim, Pacific Northwest, and the Breaker.News. The big deal feature. The Speaker of the BC Legislature puts his job and his reputation on the line. Daryl Plekis wants an audit into the suspended clerk and the sergeant-at-arms, and he says it will outrage British Columbians. And I will award a virtual Nanaimo bar to those who deserve it. But first, is it just me? Is it just me, or is this BIPOC talk divisive and counterproductive? What is BIPOC, you say? Well, it stands for Black, Indigenous, or Person of Color, and only BIPOCs were welcome to a December 8th meeting in Vancouver. A group calling itself Municipal Candidates for Racial Inclusion emailed invitations to some of those who ran in the October 20th municipal elections, and proposed that they meet at the WASC Center for Dialogue at Simon Fraser University downtown. It was advertised as the first step to correcting what it called a demographic gap, that relatively few Black, Indigenous, or persons of color were elected to councils. The group suggested that attendees kick in $10 each, but the invitation said white or non-BIPOC candidates were not welcome, because the organizers wanted to, quote, have a discussion amongst ourselves first, end quote. The organizer's name was conspicuously absent from the email, and nobody responded to the Breaker's interview request. Jesse Joel of the Vancouver First Party said he did not get the invite, and he was critical of the hypocrisy of Municipal Candidates for Racial Inclusion, whose first act was to exclude white non-BIPOCs. Martin Luther King said it best, according to Joel, judge a person by the content of their character, not by the color of their skin. Joel said that few BIPOCs were elected in Vancouver because the dominance of the NPA on the right and the Vancouver District Labour Council endorsed candidates on the left. Both of them prevented smaller parties and independents on making breakthroughs because the NPA and the VDLC had all the money. City Council candidate Raza Mirza Mohammed of Pro Vancouver did not receive an invite. Rohanna Rizal, also of Pro Vancouver, did, but he refused to go because the organizer was excluding white people. As it was, Ken Sim of the NPA was only 957 votes shy of making history in Vancouver to become the first non-white mayor of Vancouver. Instead, Labour-backed independent Kennedy Stewart took the top office. But history was made, because 8 of the 10 city councillors elected were female. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. This week it takes on an international flavor. The Breaker reported about the bail hearing for the Huawei billionaire's daughter, a glimpse into the world of a Vancouver astronaut family. Meng Wanzhou, the chief financial officer of Chinese smartphone giant Huawei, was arrested at Vancouver International Airport on December 1st amid her trip from Hong Kong to Mexico. She is wanted by authorities in the United States for fraud after allegedly using a subsidiary called Skycom for Huawei to do business with Iran, contrary to U.S. trade sanctions.
That trade tension. It is mounting. The chief financial officer of Chinese technology giant Huawei was arrested on Saturday at the request of the United States, a move likely to escalate tensions between the two countries.
The biggest private company in China, worth almost $27 billion, according to the firm's latest annual report. It recently overtook Apple to become the world's second largest smartphone maker.
Is that when I was in government, we were increasingly concerned about the penetration of Huawei and ZTE into Western democratic telecommunications networks. These are organizations ultimately tightly tied to Chinese security apparatus.
That is coverage of Meng Wanzhou's arrest from Al Jazeera and Fox, which interviewed former Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper. China reacted angrily at Canada, demanding her release. On December 7th, international media descended upon the Vancouver Law Courts for Meng's bail hearing. Meng's lawyer David J. Martin said she should be let out of jail to live under surveillance at her husband's mansion in Dunbar. The U.S. government says Huawei is a risk to its national security and that Meng is a flight risk and should stay in jail. The Canadian government lawyer who said that said so because of her extreme wealth and that she lives in China, which has no extradition deal with Canada or the U.S. The court heard that Meng had lived in Vancouver and was a permanent resident of Canada until 2009. The name of her husband, Chao Zhang Lu, is on the deed for two mansions in Vancouver worth $22 million combined. They also have a daughter who is 10. Meng has three boys from a previous marriage. Her bail hearing continues December 10th. We also reported under the headline, No End to China BMW Mystery for BC Real Estate Investor. A lower mainland real estate investor whose company supplied steel to the Beijing 2008 Olympics failed to convince a BC Supreme Court judge who was responsible for losing the BMW that she bought and sent to China more than 8 years ago. All of Xu Yi Liu's claims were dismissed against defendants Westport Motor Cars, Wai Chu, and Lin Song Chen after a 16-day trial last spring. Liu spent $240,000 for a 2009 BMW 750Li in 2009. The price tag included shipping, customs, and taxes. Westport found the car in Missouri, sent it to the port of Los Angeles, and had it loaded onto a freighter bound for China. When it got to Guangzhou, authorities seized and impounded the car as part of a bigger bust of smuggled goods. Liu does not drive, but she has a collection of luxury cars. She got nothing for her money, and Judge Christopher Grauer could not find anyone to blame. And Trudeau supporter wins a loony in defamation judgment. A BC Supreme Court judge ruled that a Chinese-Canadian real estate investor was defamed on the WeChat social media platform, but the judge awarded him only $1 in damages. In her written judgment, Justice Nina Sharma slammed Miao-Fei Pan for paucity of evidence and his lack of candor with the court. Miao-Fei Pan had claimed $360,000 to $450,000 in damages because he said his reputation was ruined and that the stories caused him depression and anxiety. Pan had sued journalist Bing Chan Gao, who wrote 10 articles in December 2016 and January 2017 about Pan under the pen name Hebian Huang. Gao, who works at Canadian City Press, used the pseudonym because he believed the Chinese government was behind the cancellation of WeChat accounts in his own name. Gao's reporting had accused Pan of buying seats on the boards of Chinese expat societies, owing millions of dollars worth of taxes in China, and stiffing hundreds of families in failed real estate development deals in China. Sharma found two of the 10 articles were defamatory and ordered them removed from Gao's website, but she rejected Pan's application for a permanent injunction against Gao. During the 11-day trial, Gao represented himself in court, while Pan retained three lawyers from the same firm. Gao's only mistake appeared to be failing to contact Pan to get his side of the story. Sharma found Gao had reported on a matter of public interest without malice. As for Pan, she ruled that he deserved no more than a token $1 award because of his conduct during the trial. Pan famously hosted Prime Minister Justin Trudeau for a Liberal Party of Canada fundraiser at one of Pan's mansions in 2016. In 2017, one of Pan's other mansions suffered a devastating fire in Shaughnessy. It was ruled arson, but nobody has been charged. And Sam Karp of Sports Pro Media reported Seattle's NHL arena costs jump to $850 million. Redevelopment project set to cost more than $200 million more than initially predicted. The Oakview Group, which secured the franchise, is also spending $650 million to enter the National Hockey League as the 32nd franchise. The privately financed renovation is on the 1962-built Seattle Center Arena. Sod was turned December 5th. The arena will be complete and the puck will drop in 2021. The Seattle Metropolitans won the Stanley Cup in 1917. They were hoping to win another in 1919, but the flu epidemic canceled the series with the Montreal Canadiens. They lost the 1920 Stanley Cup to the Ottawa Senators. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast, ongoing coverage of scandal at the BC Legislature. On December 6th, at the first Legislative Assembly Management Committee meeting since the suspensions of the top two officials, the Speaker, who chairs the committee, proposed full forensic audits and vowed to quit if the public is not outraged by the findings. Darrell Plekis said that very early in his tenure as Speaker, very serious concerns were brought to him about certain activities that were taking place in the Legislative Assembly. He said that when he learned of this information, he felt a great duty to safeguard the integrity of the institution and be very mindful about why elected officials are there. Quote, "That's to make sure that public dollars are spent appropriately," end quote. Clerk Craig James and Sergeant-at-Arms Gary Lenz were suspended by the legislature on November 20th with pay until further notice. The RCMP had been investigating since the summer, and two special prosecutors had been appointed October 1st. No charges have been laid, and the details of the allegations have not been made public. But sources tell The Breaker that there was an allegation of corruption. James and Lenz hired lawyers from the Faskin Law Firm in Vancouver and public relations advisors from the Peak Communicators Crisis Communications Company. James and Lenz claim they did no wrong and have asked for their reinstatement. At that December 6th meeting, Darrell Plekis passionately defended his due diligence and his decision to call the RCMP. He called for a separate forensic audit and vowed to quit as Speaker if taxpayers of BC are not outraged. Here are highlights of that very animated meeting where Liberal House Leader Mary Polak quizzed Plekis about the situation.
It would seem to me that whether one wants to call it an investigation or not, the appropriate action under the Act was to report any findings, recommendations to the Legislative Assembly within 15 days as the Act requires.
Okay. Well, let's be clear again. We've heard this reference numerous times to Mr. Mullen being hired as an investigator. Nothing could be further than the truth. Not even close. And I'm not asking you to take my word for it, because at the end of the day, if we're referring to police activity, I'm sure the police will jump forward and special prosecutors will jump forward and tell you that he wasn't investigating, and they would probably also tell you that every single thing he did and I did leading up to giving police information was done not well, but perfectly.
Whether one calls it an investigation or an inquiry, the efforts undertaken by the Speaker and his advisor to look into his concerns must have happened under some authority, and if not under the authority of the Legislative Procedure Review Act, then under what authority?
I have the authority to the extent that I'm responsible overall for security. I also have a duty to taxpayers to make sure if I ever see something that I think is inappropriate in terms of spending, financial matters, that I pursue that with due diligence. There would not be a taxpayer in this province who wouldn't want me to do that. They would also want me to pay attention to the workplace environment and to make sure that people are treated fairly, et cetera, et cetera. And I can tell every single taxpayer out there, take it to the bank. I will be doing that every time. I will be doing due diligence. Call it investigation, call it what you will. I will be doing that for every taxpayer.
Under the authority of what statute, though, sir?
Under my authority as Speaker. And if somebody says that I don't have that authority, I have that authority and obligation as an elected official. All of us have that responsibility. When we see things which are untoward, we need to take action on it. We are not going to bury anything. Under my watch, there will never, ever be anything buried here, ever. Every single person who has a concern, every person who works here, who has worked here, has a concern that they want to come forward with. They have to know they have a safe place to do that, and that's the Speaker's office.
In that case, then what of the activities that were undertaken, and can you describe to us the role that Mr. Mullen actually played if it was not investigating, as he seemed to indicate in his public commentary?
Okay, I'm going to pass this over to Mike, but I will come back to your question because, again, there's this persistence that somehow...
We want Mr. answers, Mullen, sir.
No, I will be able to do that in a moment, Mike.
Thank you, Honorable Speaker. What concerns me is that questions being put forward in the guise of we want answers are being asked both publicly but also in correspondence that we've all received that makes it clear that the issue of a police investigation is clearly secondary to the questions. Absolutely, it is secondary. The integrity of this investigation appears to be secondary to the questions being asked. And the fact of the matter is, there is an ongoing police investigation with two special prosecutors. They need to be able to do their work without having to worry about whether their work is being hindered or compromised because of a desire to pursue a different agenda.
If that's possible, without impacting the police investigation, why is it not possible to answer that question now?
Because we thought, as a reasonable person would think, don't be talking about anything so long as there's a criminal investigation. And if this hadn't degenerated into a circus, which it is, we've lost focus on what the issue is here. All I'm doing is saying, as an elected official, oh, I think there's something wrong here. That's all I did. And I'm being criticized for that. My office is being criticized. Previous speakers have been criticized for not being attentive enough to the public purse. You will not be saying that about me at the end of my tenure. And I'd also say, the faster that this audit can happen, the better. And I'm sure it's the wish of you and your colleagues that I get out of here as quickly as possible. And so I'm willing to say, let's make this fast. Let's get this audit triple time. If this can be done next week, let's do it. And we know that it can't be. I'm saying, let's do this fast. Let's not get back in February without any of this on the table. Because this is also hurtful to this institution. We can't be expected to run normal operations with this non-stop accusations of wrongdoing on behalf of the Speaker's office. Non-stop attacking of a legislative employee who's simply doing his job. I would ask you and everyone else, is there any one single thing that Mr. Mullen has done wrong? I know what's going to happen at the end of this. People are going to be cheering for Mr. Mullen, and they're going to say, whatever you do here at the legislature, don't get rid of Mr. Mullen.
Another NDP member who contributed to the meeting was Gary Begg. The rookie MLA in Surrey is a former RCMP officer.
That there is a police investigation underway. The nature of that investigation, we don't know. The police don't know what they don't know. For us to presume that we're safe in talking about any element of this case is dangerous, because we don't know what the nature of the allegations that the police are investigating are. And in an investigation, many things that you don't know at the beginning become apparent during the course of the investigation. So all of these questions, all of these statements, run the risk of prejudicing a completely independent investigation, which is what we all decided we wanted. So all of us, again, would be well advised to not speak about any matter for fear that it will prejudice this ongoing police investigation.
There's much more to come on Scandal at the BC Legislature on future editions of the Breaker.News podcast. Every week, we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to people who make a difference. On this feature, which is brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to Susan Patterson and Garrett Rusin. They are folks who were involved in reuniting stolen dog Misha with his owner, panhandler Mike Lorimer. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. This has been brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Go to sprucehill.ca for more information. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of December 9th, 2018. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on December 9th in 1956, Trans-Canada Airlines Flight 810 crashed on Mount Slessie near Chilliwack, British Columbia, killing all 62 people aboard, including five Canadian Football League players returning from the All-Star Game? Gordon Sturtridge of the Saskatchewan Roughriders was one of them. In 1957, a youth football league in North Vancouver was named in his memory. And on December 9th in 1965, A Charlie Brown Christmas debuted on CBS. Now you know. Send your feedback. Send your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.